This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Wrestling love, that is. You've come to the right place. This is Pro Wrestling Love, Volume 12. We pick up where we left off in Volume 11. We'll be breaking down numbers 20 through number 16 on our list for the greatest shoot-style matches to take place in Japan. I am your host, Marty Sleaze, Superstar Sleaze on Twitter and on the Pro Wrestling Only forums. I am joined today on the Place to Be Nation podcast network with Matt, who is Cap on the Pro Wrestling Only forums. He's Markout Mountain Matt on Twitter. We both know each other from the GWE Project at freeforums.net. Every year since 2019, we have balloted the top 100 greatest wrestling matches of all time. Any country, any promotion, any time period, any genre, you name it, it's eligible. Nominate it. Come to the forums. We welcome all people. We hope this encourages you to participate. And so this is numbers 20 through number 16, best suit style matches to take place in Japan. All right, welcome to the Pro Wrestling Love Show, episode 12. This is part two of the greatest Japanese suit style matches of all time. And we are scaling that Markout Mountain again. We got Matt on the line. It's been a long time no talk, Matt. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well. How are you?
I'm doing great. Just to remind everyone, Matt is Cap on the PWO forums. He is Markout Mountain on Twitter. And we are both on G as in great, W as in wrestling, E as in ever, project.freeforums.net. It's a forum where we discuss the greatest matches of all time, and once a year we gather and submit ballots for the greatest matches of all time. And the Pro Wrestling Love Project is trying to break that daunting process into piecemeal by ranking smaller versions. So what's the greatest match of this promotion or the greatest match of this genre? So with the ultimate goal of being able to construct a ballot every year. So I have Matt on the line. We went through 25 through 21 and an introduction to suit style in the last episode, excuse me. And today we'll break into our top 20. So I believe is there anything you want to say before we get started, Matt?
No. Oh, good. We had an extensive introduction last time, so I think that should sort of serve as the jumping off point for all these pieces of the list.
Okay, and nothing new in the past week?
No, nothing new in my life. Literally nothing has changed.
Nothing has changed since the last episode, has it? All right, I will do – so number 20 is the – oh, yes, so if I recall correctly, it's been a while since I heard what your number 21 was. You mentioned it was an Ishikawa versus Ikeda match.
Yes.
So I have my first version of their match on my list, but it's a tag team match. It's Yuki Ishikawa and Takeshi Ono versus Daisuke Ikeda versus Katsumi Yusuda. What do you think about Yusuda? Is that, you think I'm close on that one?
Sounds, again, much like a lot of this, sounds yep. Right-ish to me.
Yep. All right. Anybody who wants to correct me on Yusuda's name, let me know. So, Battle Arts, this is from January 21st, 1997.
I do not have that, and not to sort of spoil too much, I do not have any tag matches on my list. I have not gotten as much into the shoot tag matches as I would like at this point.
Don't know what to do. I as you know, before I was the host of Pro Wrestling Love, I was the co-host of Tag Teams Back Again. Whoop, there it is. So I mean, gotta show the tag team some love. Since you don't have the any tag teams, I can safely say this. I just want to give a shout out to my last cut, my number 26, if you will, a Battle Arts tag team match, which was Yuki Ishikawa and Alexander Otsuka.
Atsuka.
Versus Daisuke Ikeda and Takeshi Ono from October 30th, 1996. That's Battle Arts. I won't say anything more about the match. I don't want to dwell on it too long, but that was my number 26, and I just wanted to show some love to the Battle Arts tag team because I love the genre.
Nice.
To me, I feel like Battle Arts tag team matches are kind of like they combine all the great elements of like All Japan, like the escalating narrative, the saves, and all that with shoot style. So it's just like the best of both worlds. We'll definitely talk about Ishikawa and Ikeda a lot. Like I said, I don't want to blow my wad and just talk about it all now, and then we won't have anything to talk about later. But to me, this is the real life Tom and Jerry. I don't know who Tom or who Jerry would be in this analogy. Who would you have? Well, how would you cast them? I have something that popped into my head. How would you cast? Who would be Tom and who would be Jerry in this?
I think Tom would be Ikeda, and Jerry might be Ishikawa, and maybe that's just because I sort of, on a very broad scale, think of the striking as more of a blunt instrument and the grappling is more of a nuanced instrument. But I don't, I keep going back and forth.
I kind of think I agree with you. There is something about Ikeda that is a little more heelish.
Oh yeah, for sure.
And so I think that's why I would cast him in the role of Tom. And then on top of that, well, and so he's a little bit more heelish. And the way Ishikawa is a little bit more babyface is he's a little bit more resilient. He kind of has that fight from underneath style. So I think, didn't they have a match this year? Or
Yes, and
like 2020, I mean?
yeah, they did in WXW in Germany. And if we had expanded, I might have put it on my list just to talk about something from the past year or two, because it was so good. It was so ridiculously good for their age.
How old are they? I gotta be slow.
They're both in their 50s. I think I looked it up into like they're 100 year over 100 years old together, I believe. Because I was just blown away by how, obviously they were much more physically limited, but they still told a great story. And it was, again, kind of this weird, like they have no business being this good in 2020.
Yes, Ishikawa. Well, what's funny is, and this didn't used to happen, but there is now a famous Japanese volleyball player who has supplanted Yuki
Yes.
Ichikawa as the person when you Google.
Yeah.
So Ichikawa is 53 and
I think I hit his
Daisuke.
51 or 52, I think.
That makes sense that they're about this 52. I mean, obviously everybody's bodies are different, but it seems like around 60 when people really fall off the cliff. Like there's some people who can still kind of go in their 50s. So I guess.
And Ishikawa also has some good matches with Timothy Thatcher in WXW. He has one in WXW, and I think, yeah, they're both in WXW, but one time they're in Toronto, I think.
Holy shit. That's talk about a dream match, brother.
It's well worth looking, going out of your way to find. It's really fun.
You might have to, if it's more challenging than just Google searching, we might have to talk about how one goes about finding these
Yeah,
matches.
we'll get him. We'll get him, see.
This sounds good. I definitely love me some Ishikawa, Ikeda action. Just like I said, it's just Tom and Jerry in the sense that, to my knowledge, they started fighting in 1996 and they had a match in Germany in 2020. They don't stop. It's the interminable rivalry of professional wrestling. So,
Yep.
and also it's the classic story of shoot style, probably the most classic story. It's the wrestler versus the kickboxer, with Ikeda being the kickboxer and Ishikawa being the wrestler. And what I love is you can even just tell by the way that what boots they choose to wear. Like Ikeda has the shoot style kick pads, which I think it's really funny that Chris Jericho has shoot style kick pads because he worked in war in like 1995 and was in vogue at the time. So another way shoot style has influenced professional wrestling is Chris Jericho, of all people, has shoot style kick pads, and as opposed to Yuki Ishikawa, who wrestles with sort of your traditional short wrestling shoes with the laces. So, does anybody still wrestle with the laces to this day in modern
The
wrestling?
short shoes?
They're either short or long. Like, I'm thinking Bret Hart, like, long-laced ones.
Didn't Roderick Strong have, like, the short shoes with the laces and people called him Shitty Little Boots for a while?
Is that why there's a dude on Pro Wrestling Only called Shitty Little Boots?
Maybe that might be. That's what I always assumed it was. I'm pretty sure that when he was doing, like, when he was, like, the PWG champion, I'm pretty sure it was around that era where he was, like, to me, legitimately one of the best wrestlers in the world during that time, at least in output. It was really great. But I'm pretty sure that was when he had the little shoes. They're normal size shoes, but they're just shorter, yeah. and I think people were chanting Shitty Little Boots at him.
I think Orton wears laces too.
Yeah.
To this day, well, it's interesting because someone, who was it on the Stone Cold Steve Austin podcast that explained it? It might have been Rip Rogers. He's who's in my head, but I could be wrong. Explained that laces can cause a lot of damage. Like, yeah. If you don't tie them right and you don't tuck them in properly, like, they can, like, fuck up your eye and face real good. So I guess I'm not too surprised that a lot of people, just for safety reasons, went away from laces.
I think
one of the ways that Shoot Style is influential is that they were the first to introduce the kick pads to cover the laces.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure 84, like, UWF is where you first start seeing those.
Probably, yeah.
And again, I think it's because there's going to be so many kicks thrown, because kicking, especially kickbox style kicking, is not something you saw in America or Japan really in the 70s and 80s. If you're going to do that, you got to protect the person, and the kayfabe reason can be, well, it's a foreign object. You know, you don't want to win the match because of an errant lace shot. You want to win it because of the kick that you're using. So I think there's a cover for it too. Just wanted to talk a little bit about some influence that Shoot Style has, even on American wrestling again, because I think that's an import from Japan. Mm-hmm. To talk about this match, Ikeda is a great striker. He's the man. Some of his best kicks ever, I really feel like, take place in this match. And really what separates the 97 match from the 96 match, in my opinion, is just that the strategy is more obvious and apparent. And I just really like when that strategy takes center stage. Sometimes, you know, a deviation from the strategy can be explained, but sometimes it just kind of serves to muddy the waters or undermine what's going on. I love when it's just really neat. And I understand that's not really how real life works, but that's the whole point of watching this, as we explained in episode one, or the first part of this, is that sometimes we just want that, you know, we crave that just like neat narrative, and that's what they can provide for us in a predetermined environment. So on top of that, we also have another aspect that I really love about Japanese wrestling is when you have a veteran on each side and I don't know if these are rookies per se, but mid-carders, let's say. And there's a very clear distinction between who the senior partner is and who the junior partner is. And so we really see that at the beginning with how the senior partners have to bail out their junior partners a lot. Eventually, we see Ikeda really light up Ishikawa. Usually, Ikeda is the more of the aggressor at the beginning, and Ishikawa kind of fights from underneath. I also love how they position people in the tag setting. Yusuyuda does a great job using his kicks to position Ishikawa into their corner. This allows them to do double teaming. So that's what I really love, is the marrying of tag teams, which doesn't really sound like it would make sense in a shoot environment. Because they're doing shoot moves and they're doing body positioning and ring positioning in a shoot way, it makes the tag, it really enhances the tag feel to it. And then some of these shots, I mean, the other aspect of battle arts that I kind of touched upon last time, but didn't really apply to sort of the Michinoku versus Minoru Tanaka match, was how ultra violent it can be. And Ikeda is just rifling Ishikawa in this. I mean, it's really insane that, like, these people do not legitimately get knocked out in battle arts, because some of the headshots they take are just insane. And this is another strategic element I really enjoyed, was when Ikeda tags out to Yusuyuda, it really it was a big mistake, because he basically, what happens is the foot gets taken off the gas pedal, and Ishikawa is able to come back with a big suplex, a backdrop driver. Again, the showing battle arts is a little bit different than most shoot style. You're going to see more of those throws and a little bit more pro style moves. And so they had been working at Kaita's leg very early on. That ends up becoming a big deal. And we start seeing, okay, Ishikawa can take a licking but keep on ticking. Now it's Ikeda's turn to show that he can take a licking and keep on ticking. So Ishikawa reverse. Now, what's interesting is we saw Ikeda was desperately trying to knock out Ishikawa with these kicks to the head. Ishikawa's version of laying it on thick is desperately trying to submit Ikeda with a variety of toe holds and leg bars. So that's what I mean. Like, I really love how this strategy is very apparent. It's very clearly delineated. Ikeda is the striker. Ishikawa is the wrestler. So a combination of the ropes and Yusayuda and are the only things that really save Ikeda. But again, it's when Ono comes back in, the junior partner, that the things go south for the Ishikawa team. Ono employs bad tag wrestling, and he does not keep himself between Ikeda in the corner. And not to bash modern wrestling or anything like that, but it does drive me nuts in today's wrestling that people just don't put a body between themselves and their opponent's corner. It's something that should, I mean, unless you're trying deliberately to, because it is wrestling, you can deliberately try to show a mistake, but that's not really what's going on. We all know that they're careless. And so I really wish people put a lot more thought into that. Stone Cold Steve, I know I say it a lot on the show. Stone Cold Steve Austin repeats himself a lot on the show, and I feel like I repeat myself a lot on the show too, is he has this mantra, and I love this mantra. It's think, shoot, but work. And if you were thinking shoot, you would have a body in between your opponent and his corner. Anyways, little tangent there, but just an important thing. Ishikawa is so we have Ikeda tag out. So that means he is tagging out to his junior partner. So, but his junior partner has no damage. And this is what I love about shoot style wrestling, is because strategy is so important. How is Ishikawa going to react to a fresh man? And what we see, what he does is he doesn't go for the wrestling strategy so much as he goes for dumping the fresh man on his head strategy. So now we have a new element to it. Now it's head drops, which were in vogue at the time. It's 1997. All Japan is head drop crazy. I think all of Japan was in head drop fever at this point. So you do get a lot of that. And so that was really cool, is to see the shifting of the gears. New guy in, new strategy. And what's interesting also is that Yusayuda gets to show some time to shine and gets to show that he is game on the mat. He ends up trapping Ishikawa in a cross arm breaker. Ono is able to save, but the damage has been done. So now we have a new inroad for the Ikeda team to take. Now they can work on Ishikawa's arm. So we've moved from head rocking to now working the arm. And so I just love those little things, you know, and how it organically kind of builds and stuff. And I love how Ishikawa guards the arm and really tries to keep it away. He's trying to go for the leg to kind of to stave off the attack. And then this is the other great part about shoot style battle arts, especially, is sort of this Katie bar the door, pair six brawl, like you're breaking loose in Tulsa. Jim Ross is calling it all the time. And they're all in the fucking ring, and they're all just swinging for the fences, kicking ass, taking names. And this Ikeda takes this wild swing. He misses by a country mile. And all of a sudden, it's like this massive, like, bear paw swipe, like he's the hand of God, and just strikes Ono down. And Ono is just ripe for the picking. Again, junior partner. And Yusayuda is the one who gets the win, spinning back chop on Ono's neck, and then applies a rear naked choke for the finish. So hot finish. Love the shifting strategies. Also love the clear delineation. Ikeda is the striker. Ishikawa is the wrestler. Love the delineation between the senior partners and the junior partners. It really just kind of, like, talking about it, to be honest with you, it's kind of fuzzy in my mind, but talking about it's got me really excited for the match all of a sudden. So it's a badass match.
Yeah, I think the thing with me is, and hearing your description of this, it kind of reinforces my thought process. For whatever reason, if I don't feel like I'm ready to commit like the time and energy into a new style or new genre that I haven't been into yet, I'll hold it off, right? And so for like Shoot probably got held off for a while, maybe a year or two, because I was like, I'm not ready. I'm not there. You know, I don't have enough time. I don't have mental energy.
You're not emotionally available yet.
Right. And I almost feel like every time I get ready to maybe start turning on some of these tag matches, particularly obviously Battle Arts, for some reason they feel like something a little different to me. And I think I hold it off a little bit because of that. And I almost feel like there is enough of another layer of story with the junior, like the senior and junior members of the teams, and the way the kind of the breakdowns and those kinds of things. It's not completely different, obviously, but it feels like it's going to be something that as soon as I watch one good one, I'm going to want to dive in. Like, I know myself, and I need to like give myself like time. It needs to be like when I know I have a week that I can just burn on wrestling in my spare time. And so I probably won't have the willpower to not watch a bunch of Battle Arts tag matches once I start watching Battle Arts tag matches. And maybe subconsciously, that's why I put off watching Battle Arts tag matches.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's completely similar to my rationale for Joshi. Like, I just want to get in. I just want to, like, I've watched so much American and men's Japanese wrestling that I just want to get through it all, say it's done, before I go into Joshi and just further, like, oh, this is like another thing that's getting like kind of thrown into the mix. I really want to give Joshi it's just time, a fair shot, and really just, you know, go to town once I get a chance to sit down and enjoy.
Well, I really need you to start watching Joshi so that when I'm fixing the ballots at the end of the year, I can put another vote down for Kandori versus Hokuto. Like, nobody would believe that you voted for Kandori versus Hokuto now because you've vocally never watched Joshi. So,
do you know I'm the only person who didn't vote for that?
Yeah, I know. I know. I fixed the ballot. I'm just kidding. For my own corruption, I need you to get into it, man.
Yeah, was there any match that was on all the ballots, or was that the one that was most prevalently on the ballot?
That was the one that was on the most. So I think we had 16 ballots. That was on 15, and there were a few that were on 14.
That's amazing that like 6394 and like 6595 were on less ballots than that. Like, not that, like, I feel like, you know, it's only one ballot, but you know what I mean. Like, those are like, yeah, those are what people think of. Like, that's crazy.
It was so good. It was really interesting little, like, interesting calculations at the end, and just sort of just the results there were kind of just a little bit of compelling side notes in terms of the whole list.
6595 won both years in a row, right?
Yeah, the tag match, right?
Yeah, the tag match.
I don't know why. I don't know what my brain went, but yeah, it won both years. This one was closer, and it got like, I don't know, it got like 9 or 10 number one votes.
I was one of the people. Yeah.
And Kandori Hokuto only got one. That was me. And it was still relatively close because it ended up on one more ballot.
Right. And I kind of fucked it over because if I had watched it, I probably would have put it on the ballot.
Yeah. If you'd watched it, I could go ahead and tell everybody you voted at number one.
Okay. Yeah. So I think we can move on to your number 20 then.
Sure, for sure. Yeah, so you might have this one higher. Kiyoshi Tomura versus Josh Barnett, U-Style, 11-23-2005.
No, I don't, and I am a terrible wrestling fan for not having seen this. You would think that me and Josh Barnett, because we're best friends and I had that one charity exchange with him, that I would know, I would watch all of his stuff, but I have not seen it. I am aware of it. I have watched some Tomura in U-Style. Maybe two or three matches, but not the specific one. So I'm here, looking forward to hearing from you.
Okay, so yeah, you're definitely not on Barnett's Christmas card list next year after this. I really like this match. I always kind of, you know, Josh Barnett, I think, is a really good example of somebody who has got obviously legitimate credentials. He's a great fighter, wrestler in real life. He's a champion in mixed martial arts, a variety of promotions. And that doesn't always translate really well to any kind of professional wrestling setting, and particularly shoot style. Josh Barnett, I think, is pretty good at it. I feel like I always want him to be, I don't want to say better, but like, I want to get a little bit more out of it sometimes, but that's really like devil's in the details, nitpicky kind of things. He's really, really good. And here, I think, is his best work in terms of professional wrestling settings. You would expect, given the size differential, that he would play the bully here, and he really doesn't. He's sort of, I don't want to say he's tentative, but it kind of looks like he is playing the long game. He's seen what Tamura has done to bigger opponents in the past. He knows how dangerous his strikes are. So he's not just trying to bully him. He's not just trying to walk through things early in the match, particularly. And that comes back in a really interesting way later, where when he does get pissed and hulks out, it's more impressive. So there's this great spot where he's, you can kind of see, almost feel his frustration, and he's, he uses a basically a belly to back suplex, and Tamura is just far enough away from the ropes that he can't stop it, but he's reaching desperately for the top rope as Barnett slowly deadlifts him over. It's a really dramatic spot. Like, shoot doesn't have high spots in the same way that like traditional wrestling matches do, but their version of high spots is really cool, and that's definitely one of them. There's a spot later where he kind of walks through some strikes because he's pissed, and that is more meaningful because he didn't try to do that early on. He didn't just start by coming in and playing bully. But he starts by doggedly going for arms and takedowns and kimuras or double wrist locks, and really using his catch wrestling and technique in combination with his strength. And then they can build to the more maybe more expected dynamic of Tamura's strikes and his technique versus the grappling and size and strength mixed with technique of Barnett. So I think the dynamic is really cool. I think those are the two big spots that kind of stand out to me, the big suplex where Tamura is desperately reaching for the ropes, and then Barnett kind of getting pissed and walking through some kicks that is a real elevator for the match to me. Barnett kind of fails to hit a big slam late in the match. It gets caught in a knee bar. It was a really beautiful transition. And then Tamura finishes it with an arm bar that he countered from those big slams, which kind of then shows why Barnett didn't want to jump into using his size, because he knows how slick Tamura can be and how Tamura could finish matches at any time. So they did a lot of work early in the match that, I think if you come into it, you just see these two, you might expect one thing, you get a different thing, but that feeds into the overall story that they're telling in the match. So a really well-told story and a really well-executed match that ultimately brings out the best of both wrestler in the exact appropriate time at the end of the match.
Yeah, I definitely need to see this. To be honest with you, as I was listening to you, I realized I don't think I've ever seen Josh Barnett in a pro wrestling match. I've obviously watched him fight in MMA. So my question to you is, so you brought up that you wanted something more out of him. Would you say it's because, and obviously, he's a very proficient grappler, has the technique. Would you say it's he's lacking charisma or emotion? Is that what you kind of want more out of him, or is it something else that you feel he's missing?
I don't know what it is. I don't think it's those things, because certainly, like, one of the big matches that gets hyped from him is the Bloodsport match with Suzuki, and that's dripping with emotion. Like, almost to the point where I'm like, stop yelling at each other and fight. But he's got charisma. I think it's that thing where, like I said, it's really hard to grapple in this way and not sort of make it look clunky. And I think he almost gives his opponent a little too much space to get out of the things, to get out of moves, and to get out of the controlled positions. And so It's certainly not that he's bad at it. He's very, very good at translating this into the pro wrestling setting. But, again, when putting it right up against your Volkans of the world, there might just be that little bit of space and like, oh, you're so good at this. Like, I just want it to be a touch tighter. And again, so nitpicky. Like, I almost feel foolish like making that critique given how good Barnett actually is at it compared to a lot of people who fail miserably at it, who just like don't look good doing it. Barnett's really class, but it's really high standards. Like, I have such high standards for Barnett in almost everything. I think he's, he's a great fighter. He's a great wrestler. He's a really interesting personality. He's proven to be a good booker for these Bloodsport shows. So I have such high standards for him. And I think maybe he just leaves a little extra room for that. It's probably safe, it's probably smart, but very selfishly, I want things to be a little bit tighter in certain places.
Yeah, I wonder. Oh, this is just speculation on my part. I wonder if it is because ultimately, he's trained to fight real legitimately, whereas maybe a Volkan. I don't know how many shoot fights Volkan ever was in. He was always kind of in a working environment, so his practice makes perfect. He was working to work, whereas Barton, has to go from shoot to work. It might not. And he might overcompensate, right?
That's what I suspect. I mean, I suspect it's really the right thing to do. He's being cautious to make sure he's keeping the person he's in the ring with safe. He's making sure that there is fluidity because staying too tight would be even worse, right? Like staying, keeping someone down, not letting them move would make it even more clunky. Again, it's the degree of difficulty on this is I can't overstate it because it's incredible. But Barnett's fantastic. This is a great, great match, and I would really recommend it to anybody. I think it's also, I think, probably a good segue into Shoot because it's, a lot of people know Barnett. It's a really clear story. The David and Goliath thing is always kind of helpful to get into a style that you might not necessarily be used to.
Yeah, natural story for sure. Actually, one Twitter account I want to bring up that I'm shocked I didn't bring up last time. It's definitely one of my top five. It's in my fave five, as Booker T would say. Twitter accounts is at Catch Wrestling. He does a great job, and one of the things he posts occasionally, sort of like safety tricks that he'll see in actual pro wrestling, like on Raw or something. He showed how Shayna Baszler. Was sort of ripping somebody down with maybe like an arm drag or something, or maybe a wrist lock takedown or something. And he goes out of his way to break down the video and show how Shayna did it safely but made it look violent. And Shayna Baszler is another person who comes from the Catch Wrestling School who's terrific. I mean, to me, the best athlete, maybe not even just in the women's division, but on that entire roster. So coordinated is the word I love to use for her. She's so coordinated. All her limbs do the exact thing that she wants them to do. And maybe it's because she's in there with some people who aren't as coordinated, but like when she like sweeps people's legs, it looks so good. So
Yeah,
anyway.
she's incredibly talented. I love Shayna. I don't watch the main product very much right now, and there are a handful of people that I kind of keep an eye out. If anything gets hyped, I'll cherry pick it. And those are the people that I miss, so many hours in the day. But Shayna Baszler is a person I miss because I don't watch the main roster, and one of those people I look out for.
Yeah, she's great. She's awesome. So just wanted to shout her out. And then the other thing I wanted to bring up, and I actually meant to bring it up, there was something else that you said that prompted me to think this, and then I forgot about it, is it's interesting how legitimate shooters, when they transition into pro wrestling, don't come off as a badass like a worker does. And I think the most obvious example is the Steve Austin Ken Shamrock dynamic. Ken Shamrock would tear in '97, especially would tear off everybody's tag except for like Hoist Gracie. Except for a few elite fighters, Shamrock is gonna rip through everyone. But if you asked any child, teenager, adult who the bigger badass was, who has that aura, they'd say Stone Cold Steve Austin, right? And I think it's really cool that that dynamic exists in the world. And like, even with all the technique and all, and even though logically you know Shamrock is the bigger badass, you still can feel it in your heart. And then, of course, a more recent example is Ronda Rousey and Becky Lynch. Ronda Rousey is the greatest rookie in wrestling history. That she was a fantastic wrestler, but just the aura, like, there's something about her, like the way she holds herself. I think she's smiling. She's just a fun person. You can just tell she's like a good person. Like, she's like a lot of fun. And so she just doesn't, the badass doesn't translate. Whereas Becky, who is also a fun, goofy person, but when she becomes the man, she becomes the man. And I think it was just another, like, it was like if they really did Steve Austin versus Ken Shamrock, they did it in that way with Becky versus Ronda Rousey. Which, yeah, unfortunately we never got the singles match for. But anyways, but kind of a derailment. But my point was, Josh Barnett has all the shooting credentials in the entire world. But at the end of the day, someone like Vader, who has no shooting credentials, comes off like this massive badass just because of his presence and how he holds himself.
Yeah, I think it's probably two things, right? So, and it's probably neither one of these things in a vacuum. But there are two things that might contribute to this, right? One is that a lot of pro wrestlers are, I think, probably thinking primarily about like sort of the cinematic, the aesthetic ways that we read badassery. So, you know, Austin, that's what Austin's thinking about. That's Austin's living and breathing that, right? And I actually think if you watch the Bloodsport match with Barnett and Suzuki, Barnett looks like the baddest man in the whole world ever.
Period. That's awesome. Like, I love Josh Barnett, so I'm glad to hear this.
He's nailed it by that point. By this point, I sort of agree, but, and maybe this other thing might contribute to it, is that when you start being around actual badasses, like actual highly trained people who could, you know, murder half the population or more than half, they are often the most laid back and comfortable. They are often, their everyday lives are not trying to look tough because they're not trying to start fights because that's what they do for a living, or that's what they're, you know, they know they don't need to fight somebody at the Walmart parking lot to validate themselves. So I wonder if there's just like this, you're living and breathing this world where you are a legitimate badass, but that does not translate into you pretending to be a badass. In fact, quite the opposite. It makes you more laid back. It makes you more comfortable, to where that's maybe a little bit harder to turn that on in a theatrical kind of way.
Yeah.
So, again, completely riffing off what you said, because I think it's a good point. But somebody like Barnett, who actually is kind of had one foot in entertainment for quite a while now, has clearly picked that up, because when you see him on Bloodsport, you're like, oh man, that's the, you know, I think he, like, the God of War or something like that is what he goes by, and you're like, yep, that's him, he's definitely,
oh, I think I was War Master, I think.
War Master, yeah, like,
yep. Which is much better than the babyface assassin.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's war. Well, in addition to having high standards for Josh Barnett and all things, we also should hold him to high standards for his great taste in heavy metal. So,
yes.
So he's a great Twitter follow if people don't follow Josh Barnett. And he had a great interview on Stone Cold Steve Austin's podcast. So,
oh, I heard that one.
Yeah, no, yeah. If, they're doing all those Stone Cold classics, but I don't know if it's come up yet. But yeah. I listened to that one, and it was really good. So, yeah, good little tangent there on the War Master. Okay, so my number 19 is a guy who ended up having way more fame in Pancras, but before Pancras was also a great shoot style wrestler. I'm talking about Masakatsu Funaki versus Yoji Anho in UWF Reborn. I love saying Reborn. June 14th, 1989.
I do not have this one. It was one of those I did not get to, and I have not seen it.
Oh, you've never seen it before?
I don't believe so, no.
Oh, you got to see this. This is the OG banger, brother. This is the banger that begot all other bangers since. it's very good. I love this match.
What was the date on it again?
June 14th, 89.
Okay.
So The energy in this match is just off the charts. It's just insane. Funaki is just like, he's the best in these. It's like kind of disappointing that he went into Pancrase, because he would have just ripped it up in 90s Japan. He was just full of piss and vinegar. He like bitch slaps Anho at the beginning. There's a lot of stand-up brawling. Like, a lot of the matches that I include usually is like a lot of grappling. Like, Funaki matches are just stand-up brawls, wicked headbutts, mule kicks, you know, everything's just fought and earned. There's strikes in the mounts and the holds. They're just hitting each other all the time. They're just, you know, letting loose, letting it rip. This is one of those ones that's like not super like psychology heavy. It's just more like just a badass brawl. There's like some great Anho moments too, where like he's standing on the other knee while he's like got the person in the single crab. And then there's another, so Anho's going for another single crab, and Funaki's foot just like flies in the face and just like catches him, and it just caught, and that causes a knockdown. Like, it was just like this sudden like errant kick that just like whacks the dude right flush in the face, and then he's just down on his ass. And so it's just like little moments like that are just so, I love the sudden aspect of shoot style a lot. And then there's this great moment too, where on a psychological level, even though Funaki had run out of rope breaks, Anho forces him to count Funaki down. Because once you run out of rope breaks, it counts as a knockdown. It's just like this like nice psychological touch of, for, you know, saying that you need to get up. You know, there's a count. I knocked you down type thing. And then like my and then one spot I really want to talk about is Funaki uses what I call a butterfly lock. I have no other idea of how to describe this move. Basically, think of a butterfly suplex, but instead of suplexing the person, you just use it as a hold. And the reason I bring this up is because it was my finish growing up. I have a brother who's 7 years younger than me. And for the most part, I played the heel and I put my brother over. But when I didn't put my brother over, this was my finishing move. And my brother will tell you, this move is legitimately one of the most painful things you can be in. I would make his shoulder blades touch, brother. It hurts like hell. So whenever I see the move used, which is very rare, it's a very rare move to see, I'll shoot him. I'll take a picture and I'll send it to him, and he can relive the torture I put him through as a child. My other favorite finish for when I was putting him over would be, I'd go for the traditional back suplex. And he would shift his weight and fall on top for the win. So those were my two go-to. I only had two finishes. I'm no Eddie Graham. so anyways, the finish was super quick. This whole match, I think, is like 15 minutes max, maybe 10 minutes. It's just like I said, it's just like this insane burst of energy. Funaki hits this wet leg sweep. They scramble on the mat. And then all of a sudden, Anho gets like either a hammerlock or a chicken wing and wins the match with a flash submission. So I really liked how everything was so sudden and urgent throughout the match. And the energy that Funaki brings in shoot style is so awesome. And another thing I just want to completely shout out that has nothing really to do with shoot style, but his series with Shwama. I don't know if I'm saying this dude's name right, but the All Japan guy that dominated the 2010s when All Japan, like, nobody cares about All Japan. Though that series of matches, especially the first one, is fucking amazing. Everyone needs to watch Funaki in the 2010s in All Japan. Oh, there's that 5-minute sprint with Akiyama that everyone loves. Funaki in 2010s All Japan is also badass. So, yes, watch more Masakatsu Funaki. Your life will be better for it.
Yeah, so we'll talk about him more later, I imagine. Well, I know. But he is somebody that, again, coming out of this, I was like, I have not watched enough Funaki in my life, and I need more. So he's another on the, like, literally listed on a Word document of like, get to this soon.
Yeah, well, I mean, the unfortunate thing is, I could be wrong, I'm not an expert, is I don't know how much we have.
Yeah.
So like Pancrase, I don't know what happened in between Pancrase and 2010 All Japan. So maybe there's somebody who's smarter than me who knows that. Maybe he was in All Japan already. I kind of remember a steel cage match with Minoru Suzuki in All Japan, but that might have been a little bit earlier than 2010. So I just don't know his career trajectory, to be honest with you, but
I want a Funaki Suzuki cage match in my life right now. Stop recording. I'm going to watch that.
it is wrestled more like the cage is more in the UFC vein than in the pro wrestling vein. Not to put too
I've
much
already
words
given
in
it. I've already given it 5 stars. It's already
Oh, okay. But anyways, yeah, great match. And my second Yoji Anho match. So, I just want to point that out. It's not a fluke. The guy is also great. He is underrated, a little short in stature, kind of a mid-carder in the UWFI. Love the zebra print. I'm a big Zubas guy. I don't know how you feel about Zubas, but I love Zubas. So whenever I see somebody repping the zebra print, I'm all for it. So
Yeah,
shout out to Yoji Anho.
I was just getting ready to say, and the maybe the best attire in all of street wrestling.
Yeah, and all the shoot rest. I wish we got a Rat Boy Anho tag team, Yoshinari Ogawa. I feel like, oh, Rat Boy is my spirit animal. I've said this before. I feel like if I was a pro wrestler, I would look exactly like Rat Boy. Because we actually have similar like hair. Like when my hair is long, we had like similar hair. I kind of have like a similar build because he's actually like we think he's small, but he's really not actually that short. So we're similar height, and I probably wouldn't be jacked. And my big go-to thing would be to cheat nonstop. So and wear zebra print. So I just feel like I don't need to become a wrestler because Yoshinari Ogawa is a pro wrestler for me.
He's already out there.
Yep. So what's your number 19, brother?
19, I have another Kiyoshi Tamura match, this time against Super Vader, 6/10/1994.
Yes, I have seen this match. I think of it as a fun, would be in the contention for like a top 40. I do like it a lot though.
Yeah, so this to me, I think this runs right about 10 minutes. I think it might be sub 10 minute. So that's kind of like a cutoff that I think a lot of people talk about, like best sub 10 minute match is kind of a thing that gets thrown around with shorter sprints. And I think this is, and I don't have it in front of me, I'm pretty sure it's less than 10 minutes. But it's regardless, it's a great short match. I think, even though the Takata Vader feud is a bit more famous, I think Tamura probably plays to Vader's strengths more. He's smaller in stature. So he, when he's taking shots, it looks absolutely devastating. So you get the one punch possibility from Vader in this match. Obviously Tamura's trying to chop him down. He's trying to keep his distance. When they're on the mat, Tamura might even maybe show Vader up a little bit more than I would like sometimes, instead of, working with Vader's speed and grappling. But the size difference, the aesthetic here is really cool. They have this like weird little handshake in the middle that was kind of strange, but it's just for whatever reason like added something to the match to me. The striking from Tamura is great because he's coming in quick. He's trying to keep the distance. Like I said, Vader is just always there with this threatening club that could murder Tamura. He's got great lariats and those sort of punching lariat combos that he does. And basically, Vader is playing the once I get a hold of you, this is over. And that's what happens. Vader finally gets a hold of him and just tosses Tamura around the ring, power slam, overhead power slam, and then obviously the power bomb. And Vader ends up winning, but again, not before Tamura shows how great he is. And so even though Tamura didn't need to, it wasn't like Tamura needed to win or needed a lot of shine to prove that he was a star. It was much like the earlier match we talked about, the valiant loss can do wonders for people. And I think Tamura takes a valiant loss here. And I just love the aesthetic of this match, just the way that Tamura is able to work with bigger men, much like the Barnett match I just talked about before. He's really good at it, and here he brings out the best in Vader, and they don't stick around long enough for too many of Vader's weaknesses to show.
Yeah, I agree with everything you said. It is definitely a great match. I was just looking up my review, and I think this is great because we're both marching towards that Really, probably what I consider the greatest match in UWFI history, the climax between Vader and Takata. And this is actually part of a tournament where this is one semifinal, and the other semifinal is Takata versus Gary Albright. So this leads to that Takata Vader match. Yeah, I mean, everything you said, I love that overhead power slam. I can still see in my mind, and he throws him down on the power bomb. Oh, he throws him down. And everything you said. I think the one thing I'll say is just to put over that Vader selling. He's just so committed, and it like Tamura is definitely legit 100%, but he's being it has to go both ways. Vader being committed to selling and putting him over was so crucial for everything. So
and to speak to that, where as sometimes I might think, you know, maybe in the Takata matches on the whole, I might want Vader to sell a little bit less. Like, again, just for my own taste, not so much like this objective critique. Here, I think it works. For whatever reason, the way Vader commits to the selling for Tamura and his strike, this is the speed, the crispness, and the malice that Tamura throws things with. You know, Takata probably legitimately hits harder or kicks harder, but Tamura just looks like he's trying to kick your head off. It kick your knee off, like out from underneath you. So it just worked a little bit better than most of Vader's other matches for me here. I think they had really good chemistry, and I almost wish we had more from them together.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, I think one of the things is sometimes context matters a little. Like, I think Takata, you can go get away with Vader not selling for him because Takata's made, right? He's the real world's heavyweight champion. So you're already, you know, that guy is legit. So if Vader sort of steamrolls him at the beginning or doesn't really sell for him, it's like, oh shit, he's really in trouble. Whereas Tamura, you know, I mean, it's amazing that I'm very happy that he made the semifinal of this tournament. That's a big deal for him, especially in his young career. But at the same time, if Vader steamrolls him, I don't believe Tamura is that great yet. So by selling for Tamura, now we built him up, and it means more. So I think there's a little bit of that dynamic too, where you can kind of get away with Takata because he's a bigger star. You might not need to sell for him.
Yeah, that's true. That context is important in the sort of understanding where they were and why and how Vader worked with each of them.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think that's the other thing is sometimes we forget that Kiyoshi Tamura had his start in UWFI. We think of the ring stuff so much, but he was in UWFI first and putting on some great stuff there too. All right, let me see here. So my number, what are we on, 18?
Yes.
All right. Here he is. Volk motherfucking Han, baby. Here we go. I got Volk Han versus Yoshihisa Yamamoto from Rings. This is July 17th, 1995.
That missed my list.
Okay. Yeah, so Volk Han, the Russian wizard, the Soviet maestro, like – this dude, to be honest, I'm almost positive, never heard of this guy before I joined PWO. Joined PWO, you just can't stop hearing about Volkan. Everyone's Volkan crazy. Volkan fever's running wild. And believe the hype, brother, this dude is so legit and so cool and just so awesome to watch. Everything about him, he's like, what's interesting about him is he's so unassuming.
Yep.
Like, just doesn't look like he would be a badass at all. Like, he's in shape. He looks athletic and all that. It's just the haircut, you know, the demure attitude. And but man, get a double wrist lock on somebody and he just rips them down. Like, I've so many cool wrestling holds that I've seen be put on in just like the most banal ways by so many wrestlers over the years, but Volkan always finds like such a cool organic way to put on a figure four or to put on a scorpion deathlock or you know, just like, wow, I didn't know that you could do that. Like, that's wild. The other thing I love is I never knew this, and this is this is actually a true thing about MMA, is when you have a rear naked choke on someone, there's a reason you don't body scissors in such a way that your ankles are exposed, because you can actually, when you cross your ankles, you can put pressure on the ankles down. And Volkan uses this as like his magic escape all the time. And it is the, I don't know if he does it in this match. I'm just riffing on Volkan right now. And that is just like the coolest shit ever. And I was just like, oh my God, this is so awesome. So if you're ever in a real fight and you're rear naked choke someone, don't cross your ankles. Don't body scissors. You could get your ankles broken if the other person knows what they're doing. But anyway, so Volkan is just, he's a magician. You know, he's just he's the man. As for this match in particular, I would just say the organic way he applies holds is sublime. I mean, this is what, you know, great works of fiction should be written about, is the, you know, beautiful nature of Volkan's wrestling. Ultra, he's an underrated seller. Really good at, like, I love how he lunges for ropes or quick counter, stuff like that. Yamamoto is 24 at the time. He's a rookie. And you really see Volkan take him to task. Also, Volkan in English means Wolfcon or Wolf King. Like, do you get a more badass fucking name than that, by the way?
That's like, awesome.
Like, come on. All right, this guy rocks. So Volkan takes Yamamoto to task. But the thing is, he's kind of like playing with his food in a way. So he kind of leaves too much rope to almost get himself hung in sort of a way. So Yamamoto eventually kind of shows that sort of characteristic Yamamoto flash, sort of that really quick, like, grappling style. Volkan, like, the one trademark you'll, as people watch more and more Volkan, what they'll notice is he loves the double wrist lock. He uses that as his base, whether it's in a standing position, on the mat. But my favorite is when he rips someone down. It's just one of my favorite things to do. There's this great pro wrestling element to this match that I really love. This is actually only the second Volkan match I had ever watched. So I, like, really was just like, it was kind of like you're just in that, like, oh my God, like, it's just so new, like, the novelty was just so great. There was a doctor gets involved because he took down Yamamoto so hard, and I was like, oh, this has got to be a red herring. And so I'm like, oh no, that means Yamamoto is probably gonna win, because at the time I didn't really realize who Volkan was, not just who he was in our circle, but who he was in a kayfabe sense also. Sure. So we got the blast. So he, Yamamoto blasts him in the face with a palm strike or a shote, and Khan's down for eight. And at this point, I've fallen in love with Volkan, and I was just so distraught, but he gets up, he's woozy. Yamamoto puts on a tight guillotine choke. I'm like, oh no, it's a, oh, this is sad. But he wriggles out, cross arm breaker, submission victory. The magician pulls the rabbit out of the hat again. Love Volkan. So, as I said, this is my second match I've ever seen. Like, I'm not saying my way is right. I mean, chronologically can be great. I kind of just randomly chose some matches. But I think this is a great introduction to Volkan. So,
This just missed the list. It's a really great match, I think, to some of your points. Volkan is really good at being the maestro and the master that younger fighters are trying to overcome, and he's then in turn really good at playing the part of, oh no, this person is got me on the ropes, I better do something, and then kind of finishing it out. And you know, we'll obviously talk more about this later, but it's something you see here, right? Like, Yamamoto gets an almost moral victory in having Volkan on the ropes late in this match and getting the best of some of those exchanges. I really like that there's almost no bad exchanges in this. What you see in a lot of rings, especially, and a lot of shoot, is you have an exchange, you have a reset. You have an exchange, you have a reset.
Yes.
And sometimes you have a bad exchange, and that's fine, right? Like, that's wrestling. You shoot, I think it stands out a little bit more because there is that kind of block element to it.
Yep.
There's almost no bad exchanges in this. That's a note that I had about it, and it's really well done. Han is, I love that you point out he uses that double wrist lock a lot. That's such a powerful grip, and it's such a controlling grip that you can finish it from lots of different places. You can use it for sweeps. You can use it to get out of things. And, you know, it's to use this comparison again, because everybody talks about how like Jerry Lawler is the, you know, kind of one of the greatest punchers of all time, right? A lot of people's pick for that. And he uses the punch in so many different ways. Han uses the double wrist lock, the Kimura lock, in a lot of different ways. It's his punch. And he uses it as that takedown, like you said, that ripping takedown. It's such a, again, such a powerful way to control your opponent. And he uses it really well. And uses that as a way to switch back and forth between upper body and lower body submissions. And Han is, again, this is not the last time we'll talk about Han, but he's brilliant. And I think a lot of the things he does well are on full display in this match.
Yeah, and I think you're just talking about it. I think one of the reasons why he is so accessible for people is even like we were talking about, his matches have high spots, for lack of a better term. Like, when you see him do like a double wrist lock takedown, or you see like, oh my God, that's like a standing inverted figure four. Like it's eye popping. His style really makes your eyes pop. And also he's good at the selling. He's good at building the drama late in the match, like you said. So it does make it for, he makes him one of the easier people to watch.
Yeah. Well, and this will, you know, I guess this is as good a time as any to bring it up. I think he is the best at that thing that I've talked about before, that fast paced flow rolling. Like, I don't think there's anybody that we'll talk about that is better at grappling in a way that looks mean and aggressive and like he's trying to finish it, but is also able to chain from thing to thing to thing without looking clunky or without there being breakups. For whatever reason, that is the skill that he has, and thank God he found pro wrestling and used it.
Yeah, no, it is true. Like, I think we talked about a little bit with Josh Barnett. It's just, well, for every reason, like, this is what Volkan is amazing at, is just doing shoot-style grappling. It's just absolutely terrific.
Yeah, born to do it.
Born to do it. I agree with that, man. What's your number 18?
My number 18 is Daisuke Ikeda versus Alexander Otsuka, 11-5-97.
Pretty sure I don't have it higher, but and you can go ahead and talk about it, but I'm pretty sure I've seen this. Sometimes the Battle Arts matches kind of run together. So
yeah, for sure. You talked about Battle Arts a little bit earlier. We'll have quite a few more, I think. Recently, I think it was Elliot on the Greatest Match Ever board described Battle Arts as like postmodern wrestling more than shoot style. And I think that kind of makes sense to me because there's so many different elements, but its rules are set up very much like shoot, and there are lots of shoot elements to it. And to me, Otsuka is one of the better shoot wrestlers ever. He's to me the most shoot person in this promotion, like just in terms of his style, what he does. So every time he's in a match with somebody in this promotion, I often think he's bringing the most shoot elements to the match with the way he moves, the way he grapples, the way he goes for wrestling. And that's weird because he also does crazy things like topes and big swings and things like that.
Yeah, the giant swing. Yeah,
yeah. Right. Like, so he also does some of the most professional wrestling things in a match. But for the most part, I think he brings those elements in a really interesting way. So this match is, I think, a really interesting dynamic. To me, you have smooth technique versus just gritty fighting. Like, you know, Ikeda is a striker. Ikeda will kick your head off. And when Ikeda's in trouble, he'll make the fight ugly to get the advantage. And he has to do that a good bit here. There's really hot opening exchanges. There's, you know, Ikeda like catches Atsuka's arm early in the match and just throws like a wicked headbutt. Like, just those kind of things early set such a great tone for a match. And I think that's what we get here. Really good striking exchanges. There's a spot where Ikeda is just kicking Atsuka in the face until he kind of pours out of the ring. But Atsuka just grabs him and pulls him out with him. And so they have like a little mini outside brawl, which you don't see quite as much until Ikeda just knocks him down and gets back in the ring. So there's just this struggle like of like almost a real fight where somebody's getting beat up, but they won't quit. And Atsuka just won't quit when he's getting beat up. And obviously Ikeda is not going to quit in any stretch of the imagination. They exchanged like some big lariats. They exchanged some big strikes. I think Atsuka does one of his signature dives. I'm looking through my notes, where he's just got one of the best like over the top rope dives I've ever seen. He's really great at it. This is a match that like I think some people have this as their top battle arts match. I've seen that kind of going around. I've seen this gets into some people's top 100. Probably misses mine. I think it dips just a little in a few places, maybe a little bit at the end, where I think maybe the end could have come 2 to 3 minutes earlier. It feels like it peaked just a touch early. And in matches like this, especially battle arts, I think that timing is so crucial because you're building an intensity and intensity and violence and violence. And then if you overstay your welcome, I think you feel it a little bit more. I think Atsuka finishes this with a dragon suplex. It feels like a perfectly fine and satisfactory finish, but again, that timing and momentum felt like it might have just gone a touch long for my taste. But again, the number 18 shoot match ever. I have it, I have it right under that five, just under that 5-star mark for my own personal ratings for whatever it's worth. So it's still a great match. And I think one of, to me, one of Ikeda's best non-Ishikawa matches.
No, I'm reading my review, and I listening to you and reading it, I jogged my memory. I did give it a very good rating for myself too. And it is a great match. I see your point, because I can always tell when I don't really like a finish is when I write sentences like this to describe the finish. Then Atsuka just suplexed him to death for the victory. Like I'm not jazzed about the finish when I wrote that. So I think I'm gonna speculate here, and I could be wrong, but this is late 1997 Japan. All Japan is, the shit. It's a very All Japan like finish, right? You know, with the suplexes that probably go way too long. But All Japan kind of it has the pinfalls, right? They have the kick out. You can't kick out in this genre. So it's a little challenging on that front. But yeah, I agree with everything you said. To me, this kind of felt like original UWF when I watched it. Original UWF, we haven't really gotten a chance to talk about it yet, but it hadn't really become shoot style yet. And so this incorporates a lot of like cool pro style moves like the giant swing, the pile driver, the dive to the outside, like you mentioned, and stuff. It's really interesting that Atsuka won. Atsuka is definitely like he's probably the third guy in the promotion after Ishikawa and Ikeda. So very cool that he got a chance to win and beat one of the top two guys. Atsuka is definitely more of, I mean, like you said, pro style. He can fly, but he's going to be more of the wrestler takedown kind of guy, whereas Ikeda is going to be your striker, so that always creates a cool dynamic, like you said. And just one thing I just want to bring up, and I just want to see what you think about this, is at the time I was watching this, I know I was watching a lot of shoot styles, so I was watching Battle Arts and Rings simultaneously. I feel in rings, there's a lot of registering. Like basically, you'll register you're in danger, you'll go to the rope break, and then you stop. Because the danger's over, it's time to compose yourself. Let's wrestle. Or maybe you got yourself, rocked a little bit. You'll be like a little woozy, but you're not gonna sell. You're just gonna register. Okay, that got me a little good, but I'm still here. Whereas in battle arts, it's more pro style. You'll actually see selling, of limbs and stuff. So I don't know how you feel about that, but I kind of noticed that, picked up on that as sort of a difference between the two.
Yeah, I would say like to returning to my discussion from the last episode about kind of the continuum, right? Like I think of if in terms of shoot, I think it's sort of there's a continuum between like the most shooty shoot wrestling match ever, all the way to the most theatrical, least realistic thing possible.
Right.
And rings to me is sort of on the very far end of that spectrum,
Very
where
extreme.
it's really focused on that. And battle arts is a little bit closer to that line of what constitutes shoot. So it's embracing a little bit more of the pro wrestling generally. I think it also really emphasizes visceral, relatable violence that you don't have to have any idea what grappling is to know that everything in a battle arts match is miserable. And that requires a little bit more fluidity and anger and less like, okay, now things are over. Let's stop. Let's reset. Let's go back to the middle of the ring and do it again, which is very rings.
Very rings. We'll talk about the resets at some point for sure. Which I think can actually, they can both help and hinder a match depending on
Sure.
how you use. But yeah, no, I mean, like most battle arts matches, I think ultra violent is just sort of the word I usually describe them, very stiff. And a great pick. I'm glad Alexander Otsuka got a shout out. He's a great wrestler. So we are on my number 17 when we keep the Volk. We're still on the Volkan Express. This time he's against Tsuyoshi Kosaka. This is Jul oh sorry, August 24th, 1996, and yeah, it's rings.
Yes, this one I believe
I figured.
just missed my list.
Well, I'm not. I can't say I'm surprised. Obviously, there's a lot of great shoot style matches, but since you're a Kosaka fan, I was like, oh, maybe he'll have the Kosaka match, not the Yamamoto match type thing.
I'm trying to find it. I think this is the one that like quite literally just missed the cut for me.
Okay.
What date was it? 8/24?
Yeah, 824. Yeah.
Yeah, that it's probably my 26, and if I made this list again in a month, it might be a good bit higher, sort of the things I was watching and wanted to talk about. But yeah, this is a fantastic match.
Yeah, I'm actually kind of glad we don't have too much overlap, to be honest with you, just because the genre, I
Sure.
just like the idea of just being able to talk a lot about different matches, so it's good. Okay, so to be honest with you, this is the very first Volkan match I watched, which means it's probably one of like the first 10 shoot style matches I ever watched. So my review, this was also, I watched it in 2016, haven't watched it since. So my review was a little scant, and I think I was still trying to figure out what the hell ring was. But I remember loving it, and I wanted to shout it out. And I loved my opening line, so I said, "So this is rings, human pretzel making." And I think that's a great way to put how this match was. And I brought this up in my WCW podcast, and I want to bring it up here. The thing I wish Eric Bischoff did, in addition to bringing in the luchadors, was bringing in the rings guys. Because Dusty Rhodes and Bobby the Brain calling a Volkan match, like people talk about dream matches, I'm talking about dream commentary wrestling pairing. Because the amount of times Dusty would say uncle or uncler would totally make it worth it, and the amount of pretzel puns from Bobby the Brain Heenan would totally make it worth it. So that's the thing I wish most. If I had a time machine, I would not go back and kill Adolf Hitler. I would ensure that Volkan somehow made it to WCW and Dusty and Bobby had to call his match. So, this is the match where Volkan was just dropping my jaw constantly. This is the cool, when I kept talking about that figure four in the last match review, this is the match that has it. It's the coolest, most organic figure four you'll ever see. You have to see it. It's from a standing half guard. It's insane. He's the man. What's amazing is in the very first Volkan match, I wrote the double wrist lock is his base. It's his touchstone. And so, it is very obvious if you know what to look for. So, I loved his rolling leg takedown. And then the finish, I think, the finish is why I put this match over the last match. Because Kosaka puts him in this pretzel. And in the pretzel, he leaves one of his arms exposed. And in the pretzel, Han grabs the arm, hyperextends it, and Kosaka taps out in the pretzel of his own creation. I loved it because he was in his own trap, so he couldn't get out of it. It was so great. So, yeah, this is just, you know, Volkan, Russian magician, Soviet maestro, just, you know, the wizard of grappling.
Absolutely. So I totally agree on the finish. I love, love, love the finish of this match. I think you're right on everything. Like, this is really great work. And this is Volkan is, to me, not just the master of the Kimura, he's the master of the leg locks. His leg lock work is incredible, and leg locking is like really difficult. Like, it's, I mean, again, it's difficult for me because I'm bad at everything in jiu-jitsu, but I come from a leg lock heavy gym, so we do a lot of them, and it's just such an intricate, different way of going about submissions to me. And there's so many different positions, and Han just moves through them so fluidly and uses them as takedowns and transitions so well in them. And so I actually have on my notes that sort of two things that maybe keep this just outside of my list being super critical is that I think Kosaka lets himself get into some spots too deep too early, if that makes sense. So he's like, I want to see like a little bit more progression where he's like really in some trouble early on in this match. And I think some of the legwork, as much as I like it, can drag a little bit here, particularly because they're both doing dueling legwork. I think the leg spots can be really interesting, but they can also get kind of boring if you're not careful. Because there's so much, even at its most, you know, blown up for the audience, there's so many little things that are happening that are really hard to kind of perceive as a fan. So I think they maybe stick around a little too long in that for me. But this was also the first match I rewatched specifically for this project. So it might have also suffered for me, like, watching things a little bit more recently and getting kind of excited about them. But it's a fantastic match, a good introduction, another good introduction to Han. I don't know if there's a bad place to jump into Volkan matches, to be perfectly honest.
Probably not.
And it's really slick grappling, particularly leg lock grappling.
Yeah, there's definitely a match that I'm going to talk about where I'm going to piss on the finish that's actually ahead of this, but I don't know which one it is. But the reason I'm bringing it up now is because you brought up something about the leg lock. So I think it's usually the criticism that's laid at Takada's feet in his less heralded matches is that he's very reliant on, I don't know what you would call them, leg laces, knee bars, leg bars, whatever you want to say. And I do agree with that. Takada matches can be ground to the halt when he just all of a sudden goes into that mode. But the absolute worst thing, and it sometimes happens in pro style, but it can be common in shoot style, is when they have leg bars or leg laces on each other. And I call it the bundle of leg locks. And it is just so boring. I'm like, you're both in fucking holds. I don't know who's hurting who. Just get out of this. This is terrible. So I agree. When they both have them, each other in a leg lock is maybe my least favorite spot in all of wrestling.
It's a dangerous game because when you're doing leg locks, you almost always have to put your legs near their arms,
right,
to have control over the upper part of their leg, which you need for things like heel hooks and knee bars and straight ankle locks and so on. So, you know, if you know how to protect yourself, you're not in danger, but you're like, many of the ways of reversing are to get control of their legs and manipulate their legs to get out of things. So it's a dangerous game because the leg locks can be so interesting and so different and so unique to shoot, but it can slip into boring and not translating as well as you want real quick.
It can, yes, for sure. Actually, I think if I recall correctly, there is a time where Volkan, who is a true magician, actually kind of makes the bundle of leg locks work at some point. But I'll have to read some of my reviews and see if I can find it. But for the most part, the bundle of leg locks is like my least favorite thing in the world. So, what's your 17?
My 17, I am pretty sure you have this higher. It is Super Vader versus Nobuhiko Takada. This is the 1894 match.
Oh, I do have it higher. Okay.
Okay.
Yep. That I do have higher. So we'll talk about my 16. We'll talk about each other's 16s and then we'll wrap up for this
Yep.
episode. It is. You already mentioned this, so we can both. I think this is the first time we'll talk about something we both had on our list. It's
Okay.
Yuki Ishikawa versus Daisuke Ikeda, Futen,
Oh,
April
okay.
24th, 2005.
Awesome. Yep.
So to me, in the nuclear winter, there will be cockroaches, Keith Richards, and Ishikawa and Ikeda still duking it out. So these guys will be fighting each other for the rest of their lives. I don't actually have too much to really say about this match because it's so the difference between Futen and Battle Arts is very simple. Futen is run by Ikeda, and Battle Arts is run by Ishikawa. It's that simple. Otherwise, they're pretty much the same promotion. Do you agree?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. So it's to me, like we talk about the ultra-violent battle art style, this is to me the pinnacle of it. I there's an Ishikawa Ikeda match I like more because there's a little bit more defense and psychology and strategy to it. But if you just want I don't know, I think I saw Jetlag say this is not the most violent match of all time. At some point, I'm hard pressed. If this isn't the most violent match, it's definitely in the top five. It's one of the most violent things I've ever seen. It's amazing that they didn't knock each other out. I mean, really, all I have to say is it's like to me, if you're going to not have too much of a narrative, and maybe I need to watch it again because maybe there is a narrative there. But if you're not going to have too much of a narrative or psychology, just hit each other really hard. That's like the way that you can still endear me to it. And they just crushed each other. I mean, even Ishikawa, who's not really known for his striking, was punching really fucking hard in this match.
Yep.
And it was just insane. I mean, there was some good. I mean, there's scoring in this actually. Or no, there isn't. I was scoring on my own. I remember now. But you know, so Ishikawa does play the underneath role. Ikeda takes the early lead, and then you see Ishikawa make the comeback. And it's just like at one point Ishikawa's face just gets pummeled. He's bleeding profusely. You know, the cross-face chicken wing, which Bret Hart brings up, is like a legitimately painful move, and it's pretty much impossible not to apply it in a painful way. Was just the cherry on top because the fucking cross-face chicken wing, which Ishikawa uses to win, just looks brutal. So, yeah.
So I don't have a ton to add to this. The first line of my review says, "This is a project in brutality." It's just I think it's one of the best spectacle matches. And I don't know how else to say what I mean. But maybe that this match gets by maybe more on just the sort of spectacle of violence than it does psychology. And that's not to say it doesn't have psychology, but it's not the first thing I think of when I think of this match. It is just, this is the first match I've seen between the two where they feel like two old gunslingers who've come into yet another small building in front of a handful of people to beat the hell out of each other for God knows why. There's a lot of desperation at the end, which I really like. And the one spot that I like highlighted, I was like, I want to talk about this. I think you were kind of referencing this. So there's a spot where Ishikawa looks like he's punching an unconscious Ikeda in the head against the mat. And it's like I'm kind of a ghoul when it comes to wrestling. There's not a lot of things that I turn away from. Sometimes in like sort of plunder deathmatch stuff, it's not my thing, but there's not a lot of like this kind of thing that I turn away from. That was hard to watch. And then Ikeda just gets out and punts Ishikawa in the head. And there's no other way to describe it. It's just brutal. It's an absolutely brutal match. I don't know why they hate each other so much, but they clearly do.
Yeah, and that's true. I never even thought about it. I just took it for granted and never even dawned on me to even ask myself why do these two hate each other.
But they do, and as you said, they are destined to fight each other to the end of the world, and this is a great, great match. It's my second favorite match of theirs. But did you say it was your second favorite as well?
Yeah, it was. Yeah, we'll most likely have the same one, but
yeah, I'll be interested. I think we probably do, but this is really great, and it's if violent striking is your thing, this is a match you have to watch.
Yeah, I agree with that. Yeah, I mean, you were talking about the death match. Like, I was at Beyond Wrestling, and this dude just like jabbed a fork in this other dude, and he's like hitting the ropes with a fork in his arm, like, you know,
his
fucking arm, right? And I'm just looking at it, and I'm like, I really feel like I should be grossed out right now, but I'm not. But at the same time, it doesn't do anything for me, so I don't seek it out. Yeah. You know, so it's not like, oh, yeah, that was awesome. I need more of that in my life. But at the same time, I was like, yeah. But you're right. There's something about how hard they were punching in the face, mm-hmm. you know, that was just like it was incredibly, I don't know, it was uncomfortable. It was really uncomfortable.
With that spot, it's that he is selling it like he's unconscious. Which is uncomfortable, but his he's laying down, so there's nowhere for his head to go, right? Like, if you get punched in the face when you're standing up, your head can move backwards, right? Like, it's not absorbing all of that force. Or if your head's on the mat, there's nowhere for it to go, so it absorbs everything. And they're not pulling any punches, so there's really, like, I can't fathom a way that this doesn't hurt a lot. They're really leading into it, and it's probably honestly not for everybody. I think it was the TNA, one of the TNA podcasts where you were talking to LP and Walter came up, and like the idea that like Walter's brand of wrestling, the brutality that he sort of leads on, is not for everybody. This is probably not for everybody, but you know, if you're okay with that in your professional wrestling, then this is a must see.
Yeah, I agree with you. Yeah, there is psychology, because once I started talking about it, you know, Ishikawa has to work from underneath. Ikeda's on top. I actually kept track of like the knockdowns and the rope breaks, and you can see Ikeda had the lead in those, and then Ishikawa is able to knock him down more and force more rope breaks, even though they're not keeping score. I was keeping score. Mm-hmm. And so you do see Ishikawa make the comeback. So there is a narrative and there is progression. But this is like the closest you're going to get to like – it's like just stiff – it's like a stiff spot fest. Instead of high spots, it's just like stiffing each other for pleasure. That came out weird, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, the gunslinger thing, I think, is best way to think about it. Because like they're two older guys by this point even, and they, for whatever reason, they hate each other, and for whatever reason, they want to kill each other, and it's not just about inflicting pain; it's about not letting the other think they're hurting you. So there's the machismo. There's the sort of what I call like the man contest, where two people just beat each other and they don't even try to defend it. There's all of that in there, and it's all part of wrestling lore and psychology and the way we understand wrestling more generally. So I think there's definitely psychology in this match. It's not one of those things that just completely lacks it. But if you're going to like this match, it's probably going to be for the spectacle aspect of it.
Yeah, I can agree with that. All right, my man. What's take us home. What's your number 16?
My number 16 is another Tamura match. So we have Kiyoshi Tamura versus Mikel. Oh, my goodness.
Oh, this is harder than any of the Japanese things. I know what you're going to.
Ilyukin? It starts with an
Ilyukin is what you said. Yeah, it's like
LL. I am sorry to Mikel and his family that I cannot say your last name. I apologize to anybody who knows how to pronounce this name. I'm going to call him Mikhail when I talk about this match, because I have no clue how to say his last name.
What's your date on this? Cause I know I've seen it. I just want to look up my
review. The date is 1/21/98.
98. Got it. Yes. This is a match that gets talked about a lot. To be honest with you, I'm a little cold on this match, so I'd like to hear your thoughts on it. Yep.
Yeah, so I was probably a little cold on it the first time I watched it. It's one of the matches that jumped up a bit for me in this go-through. The thing that I really like about – there's two things that sort of make this match kind of stand out to me. One is that Mikhail is a pit bull in this. When he grabs something, he does not let it go. If he gets your wrist, he is going to jerk Tomori around the ring. He's going to pull him down. If he gets a leg, he's going to hold on to it for dear life. He's always fishing to control a limb and then to turn that into misery for Tomori. So there's something a little unique to how he moves and how he works that offense in. And there's nothing polished about it. Like, I will talk about this later in a little bit more depth, I think, but I like there to still be some grit and some teeth to this, even though like fluidity is super important. We've talked about that a lot. So the action is really good. Mikhail kind of feels like this freak athlete that is a bit green. He doesn't maybe know exactly. He's not maybe as seasoned as Tamora, but he's got Volkan in his corner, and Volkan is shouting out the instructions, and he's talking to him sort of when they reset. And so that dynamic is this kind of second thing I really like about this match that makes it stand out, that Mikhail kind of feels to me, and this might be completely wrong because I watch it out of context, like I watch it in a vacuum. Uh-huh. Maybe I'm completely wrong about this, but Mikhail feels like this great athlete, this great grappler, this super strong, dogged fighter who is being guided and sort of led by Han to beat Han's greatest rival, right? Tomorrow.
Yep. Right.
And I like that dynamic is really cool, and they end up having a lot of really interesting exchanges. So you know, Tamora is doing his thing. He's catching the legs, rolling through for Kimura's and takedowns, and they're both men are sort of fighting through these modified Texas cloverleaf positions that they're working on each other, and it's not the Texas cloverleaf in the pro wrestling sense. It's a leg entanglement. I won't bother sort of explaining it too much, but there's a kind of crossing of the legs, and you basically use that crossing of the legs to leverage the legs against one another for a submission. And they're both working that in a dueling way that's kind of interesting. It's good leg locking. It's good.
Wait, is this? I literally said, if I can just interrupt you for a second, I said, and then they do my least favorite spot in wrestling, the bundle of leg locks. That's probably what's talking about. I do say this, though. At least these two apply it properly with the ankle crosses. I think that's what you're trying to say.
Yeah, so those ankle crosses, that's at least in jiu-jitsu, as I have been told and trained, and here's the names I've been given. It's a Texas clover leaf or clover leaf position.
I'm just happy that Texas clover leaf is a legitimate fucking move. That's badass.
And again, insanely painful. Like a very, very – It's not something that I think people get a lot, but it is really painful when it is locked in, and you are in trouble. So I liked kind of seeing them play with that dueling position and both trying for it, but they also like were both not dead to rights. And this is little like the little things that kind of make me love this a little bit more and glad that I've been in the hold to kind of get a little bit more out of it, where I could totally see if that this could be this is also probably not the most attractive spot for other fans, but I liked it. But the match is really good, and obviously once Tamura gets just enough of advantage at the end, he's like a shark that smells blood in the water, and he finishes him with the armbar. And the thing that maybe like I probably added a spot or two just for this at the end. Han is furious at the end of this match. He's like throwing shit and yelling at Mikhail.
I didn't see that. I gotta watch it now.
So like, and they don't like zoom in on it, but for whatever reason, I didn't catch it before. Whatever reason I caught it this time, Han is like beside himself. He like, it's the first time I ever looked at Han. Like, is Han a heel? I just didn't know it the whole time. He's absolutely beside himself. It seems like, but I loved that dynamic. I loved Han being there, and I thought that they had a really kind of unique for the context of rings. They had a unique little match.
Yeah, a lot of people like this match for sure. I mean, I'm just reading my own review, and it actually jogged my memory pretty good. I guess my thing was Tamora is like one of the greatest of all time, obviously. And so to me, a lot of it kind of rests on Mikhail to see what kind of like what unique thing he brings. And I guess for whatever reason, it just he didn't bring a lot to me. I guess I kind of found him a little vanilla, you know, sort of the stocky, powerful brute. He meant you enjoyed it more, which is great. You know, more power to you for sure. Yeah, and to me, it just became – to me, I thought, I guess, Tamora was more of a sort of rope-a-dope style, kind of letting Mikhail blow himself up type of deal and eventually finished him off. Just a context note for people getting into rings, not that I know their schedule that well, but January tends to be a big month in their promotion. It's when they do the Mega Battle Tournament, and this was for the Mega Battle Tournament final, so there's a big match. And very interesting that Mikhail was selected to be in the final with Tamora.
Yeah.
But I also like the United Nations feel of rings. I think this is a good time to actually bring up some different European foreigners. Like they had the Georgian guy who actually kind of had a similar feel to Mikhail. He has that weird name, Bitzidae Tyrael or Tyrael. I don't know how to say it. You know what I'm talking about?
I think I do. I'm trying to look.
If you like this match, you would like that one too, actually. Yeah, he's from Georgia. And then like the country, not not the state. But my favorite Tamora match, not my favorite because there's other ones that I like more, but my sort of like personal enjoyment favorite one is the one he has with Willie Peters, the cocky Dutch kickboxer.
I don't think I've seen that one. No,
you should watch it. I don't know if it would make your list. It didn't make mine either, but Willie Peters is like the cockiest dick ever, and he just throws these like crazy – all he can do is kickboxing kicks, like basically, and Tamora just wrestles circles around him. But because Peters has like – just has so much insane charisma, it's super fun.
Nice.
So, yeah, just to give a couple people a couple like honorable mention shout-outs about Yoshi Tamora. No, definitely an important match and a very well liked match by a lot of different people. So I think this is a good place to stop. We can go into the top 15 in next week for our next episode. Anything you want to say before we wrap up?
No, another solid session and getting into some of the higher profile matches now. It's amazing how many great shoot matches there are.
There is. I usually say at the top of the show, but I watched 112 matches for this. I think it's important because if I only watched 26, 25 out of 26 isn't that special, but I watched 112. So this is really some of the cream of the crop. Obviously I have not watched everything. So if people have more suggestions for me, or for Matt, definitely tell us. If we missed something, we rated something too low, let us know. If we're missing something, we got 15 matches each left, so there is a possibility that there. So don't yell at us yet. You have three more shows to go. It's been great talking to you, and I've been having a lot of fun. So looking forward to next week.
Absolutely.
Okay. All right. Take care, everybody.